KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers. Experience the new 2024 Tundra, designed to combine performance and comfort with a 12,000-pound towing capacity and 10-speed automatic transmission. See your Toyota dealer for more. San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. November marks Native American Heritage Month. Indigenous leaders in San Diego are preserving culture across higher education, arts, and science. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. A university tribal liaison on what we can learn from indigenous practices.
The Kumeyaay Nation is sustainability. Like, you want to learn how to survive, well, study the Kumeyaay Nation, because we've survived many atrocities.
Then we'll talk to scholars and scientists about preserving indigenous culture. That's ahead on Midday Edition. San Diego County is home to 18 Native American tribal reservations, the highest density of any county in the United States. Local indigenous leaders are working to increase representation and cultural awareness. That also means making higher education more inclusive. Joining me now is Jacob Alvarado Wyapuk. He is the tribal liaison for San Diego State University and assistant professor of American Indian Studies. Professor, welcome back to Midday Edition.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, always glad to have you here. So you're really committed to preserving Kumeyaay culture through classes about history, traditions, and language. Can you give me some examples of those classes?
Here at SDSU, we have a class called the Kumeyaay Shmoos Project, and it was designed in a way where our students can get an idea of who the Kumeyaay Nation is, mm-hmm. and what better way to create a relationship with the local tribes. And we did just that with our class. It's been going on for 3 years now, and our students were able to establish connections with the Broner Band of Mission Indians, and we did some events at Viejas Reservation also. But the one that we are actually sending our students to Monday and Wednesdays for field work, observations, and working with the local students is at the Barona Reservation, who has been so welcoming to our students, so welcoming to us. And this relationship that we've established is probably going to be forever. Mm-hmm. You know, it took a little while, but we're there. We have this relationship to our students and go on the reservation and see how we teach.
Well, and tell me a bit more about that and what exactly it is that students learn when they go on the reservation. You mentioned right. the way in which things are taught, but there's also, like, I would imagine, a lot of cultural aspects.
Yeah, so reservation life is a lot. It's different, you know. I was born and raised on the reservation, on San Pascual Reservation, and we're still on our homelands. But when we come to universities and these kind of settings, it's a culture shock. Because this is not how our land used to look, right? The way we were raised, you know, we were all raised on commodities, which is a government resource, that's a government food that they brought in, you know? Fast forward now, we're finally coming out of the reservations. We're actually getting, a lot of us getting educated, and we're seeing the world. The history that has been told about this land has not been true, so it's time for us to speak this truth. Being inclusive is listening to the indigenous voice. Because we know who we are. We know our story. We know where we come from. And we have our creation story since the beginning of time. And that's not just the Kumeyaay Nation. That's all 574 tribes and the unrecognized tribes that haven't got federal recognition yet. They're all included in this. And we all have our way of seeing things. And it's time to look at that perspective.
About that history, though, our country's dark history of violence and erasure towards indigenous communities is not something that's always taught in depth in schools. Tell me about your own experience learning about that history.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, I grew up on San Pascual Res, and we brought up in the culture and traditions and, like, singing our songs, praying to the creator, Maha, and all what we believe in, and walking that road, that red road, it's called the red road. And then coming off of the reservation and just seeing things for the first time and understanding my perspective and who I am in this world. Yeah, I'm Kumeyaay, born and raised, traditional, and down for my people. but also learning about the colonization that took place upon our land and the history that wasn't told, and it still hasn't been told. So there's a lot that hasn't been told about who this land, this area. But what better place to tell it at a university where education is to teach everyone the truth as much as you can, right? The truth that's there. So we have the truth. So we've been doing that. It's just a whole wake-up call of we're still here. Mm-hmm. We've survived different forms of government, and we're still continuing.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think college is too late to start learning about
this? Yes. 100% believe college is way too late to be learning about history. You should be learning that at a young age. And for example, I've had students in my classes that have actually asked me that exact question, like, how come we didn't learn this our freshman year?
Or elementary school.
About where we're at. And I was like, that's a good thing you pose. You know, this is something that we talk about all the time in our communities. That's why, like, my research specifically is schooling environments for Indigenous youth, that we got to create our own schools and do the perspective of how we learn and how we grow and how we learn from our elders, how we learn from our singers, our story keepers, all the people that have knowledge that pass on those things to the next generation. Those are the kind of schools that we're working on right now, and that's what my dissertation research is all on. It's creating a school from my reservation on Sam Squaw and modeling a reservation, Pechanga, who already has a tribal school that's been going on for many years, who's been very successful with incorporating their culture, their language, their songs, their traditions. Not only that, but they're also California State Standard. They have California State Standard, so it's incorporated into the actual curriculum. And that's what needs to be done across all of Turtle Island, because we all have our own stories, we all have our own history, and it's very important to tell this story, you know?
So then is that history then passed down through oral traditions?
Oral tradition. If you look at oral tradition, it's the highest form of teaching, because you're sitting there in one-on-one with elders through your whole life. You're not just sitting there through like a class or like a 12-year degree. These are lifelong lessons, you know? And you take that whole lifelong learning and you teach it to the next. And they take that and teach it to the next. So this knowledge is straight from the voice of our Creator, who told us who we were, who told us about our songs, who told us how to live, how to walk this earth, and to live in peace and in harmony amongst everything.
Right. Well, another way Kumeyaay history is preserved is through art. That art takes a lot of forms, from music to dance to storytelling. What's your favorite medium of Kumeyaay art, and what does it teach us about Kumeyaay history?
I like bird singing, like culture, like singing and stuff like that are different cycles. I feel like that's, for me, just because what it does for me as a human being and how it affects my spirit and rejuvenates my actual spirit. And for example, you know, like when my daughter was getting older, she's still little, but I was singing and praying, and she was like, "Hey, Daddy, you know, that made me feel good." I was like, "Yeah, I did it." She's like, "Yeah." She's like, I was like, "What did it make you feel like?" She's like, "Oh, it made me, like, just, I got this, like, really happy feeling in my heart, and I just feel like this really good." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." I was like, "Well, that's what these songs are for, you know? They're helpless with everything, you know, in life."
What is bird singing?
Yeah, bird singing is a song style. It's a cycle of songs that were brought to our people from the Creator, you know? And it was done in a time where it's for our people to continue on, you know, for what we go through in life, to take care of each other, to get together, to gather. And it was a song that to help us be one, to sing, to cry, to laugh, to be together, and most of all, is to create that community that we have amongst each other and that form of respect.
So, I mean, how can people tap into Kumeyaay knowledge and culture to help address current social issues in San Diego?
There are a lot of people that are out in the community that are actually at the forefront of a lot of these issues. We have different groups within the Kumeyaay Nation that are working directly with our university when it comes to even cultural repatriation. And then we have on campus our Living Land Acknowledgement. There's three structures that are up right now. So if you go to those, you just use your QR code, and it'll tell you stories mm-hmm. of who we are. And it's going to be mixing up all along the way once we get more QR codes with different reservations.
Uh-huh.
So they'll be able to tell their story so people can will be able to tie into them. But, yeah, our Native Resource Center is another resource you can go to. Just go there, be like, hey, I want to work with the Kumeyaay, or come talk to me. Yeah, there's a lot of people that you can go through that can connect you to the community.
Well, and speaking of land acknowledgments, many campuses have incorporated those land acknowledgments as a way to honor Indigenous communities. But some people have criticized certain land acknowledgments as performative. In your opinion, what makes a good land acknowledgement?
Yeah. I don't agree with the whole performative thing, just because I was born and raised traditional. So when I come out here and do this from the reservation and, like, understanding who I am in this world as a Kumeyaay, I feel like it's a positive thing for anyone that is foreign to the Kumeyaay Nation. I think it's really something that anybody should do, is learning about the first people of any land, just so that there's no confusion, no disrespect, and that we're still here. We're alive and well, and everyone just has to put themselves in that situation of, if this happened to your people, would you want a voice at the end of the day after 300 to 400 years of colonization? Also, coming out to these settings, like when you're on campus, you're starting this, you'll see like where you're at. You'll know, you have an idea who the first people of this land are. And it's something that must be done. That's education. And it's not, if we look the other way, you're deleting history. Mm-hmm. And you're also erasing our voices of our ancestors. And regardless if people want to go out there and be performative or not, the point of the thing is that history is being taught. You know, there's work that can go into that. Like, yeah, you honor the land, but okay, let's start talking about old places that we used to go to, like the ocean. Like, we had connection to the ocean, which we don't anymore. How do we get that back? Give land back, you know, to all the tribes that are in this area so that we establish our connection again.
What has it meant to the health and wellness of Kumeyaay people to have lost that connection?
Yeah. So I think that there's been such a disconnect that it's been severed, right? We were thriving, beautiful, thriving people. That's why San Diego's beautiful, because we took care of the land. That's how we lived. We lived with Mother Earth. We lived with the creator of sustainability. We're the example of sustainability. The Kumeyaay Nation is sustainability. Like, you want to learn how to survive? Well, study the Kumeyaay Nation, because we've survived many atrocities. And also, you know, we lived on this fault line for thousands of years. Like, water has risen. We're still here, you know? Yeah, our whole connection to the ocean has been taken away. And who's, like, even my kids, like, we're not even growing up in the same valley as our ancestors grew up in, right? We're 15 miles north. So even that's, like, that was taken away from us. Our kids could be raised in beautiful Zambesquall Valley and thrive there. But yet we're not. We were pushed 15 miles north in the mountains of rocks and granite, right? So that's what was forced upon us. And yeah, we would love our connection back to the ocean, you know, where we actually have land, when it's actually ours, that we're respected as our own, you know? But that's future, right? Future leadership, and just dream to have all that.
Yeah. Well, I've been speaking with Jacob Alvarado Wypook. He is the tribal liaison for San Diego State University and assistant professor of American Indian Studies. Professor, here's to learning, and thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Khan.
Coming up, a scholar reacts to President Biden's formal apology for America's violent past.
I do think that apology is the first step to healing, but with that apology comes additional actions that have to happen.
Hear more when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ladan Akbarnia, curator of South Asian and Islamic art at the San Diego Museum of Art, where we are showcasing a new exhibition exploring Islamic art, science, and culture through the lens of wonder. Wonders of Creation, Art, Science, and Innovation in the Islamic World presents more than 200 works spanning 13 centuries across two galleries, inviting visitors to discover marvels of the universe through intersections of art and science and humanities, customs, and crafts. See medieval tools and treasures, ornate jewelry, lavishly illustrated manuscripts, and large-scale works of contemporary art. Get tickets at sdmart.org.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Last month, President Biden formally apologized for the federal government's role in running boarding schools that abused and neglected Native American children. He called the practice a blot on American history.
Lost generations, culture, and language. Lost trust. It's horribly, horribly wrong. It's a sin on our soul. I have a solemn responsibility to be the first president to formally apologize to the Native peoples. It's long, long, long overdue. Quite frankly, there's no excuse that this apology took 50 years to make.
The boarding school era lasted from the early 1800s to the 1960s. Thousands of children were stripped of their cultural identity and language. The impacts are still felt today. Midday Edition's Andrew Bracken discussed this with Jolie Proudfit. She is the Department Chair of American Indian Studies at Cal State San Marcos. Here's their conversation.
So you were actually there for President Biden's formal apology in Arizona several weeks ago. What was that atmosphere like?
Yes, I was in attendance. It was a really empowering feeling to be there with so many people who basically we are the survivors of the boarding schools that tried to kill us. And while many of our ancestors were lost in the boarding school system, we survived, and we survived long enough to be here today and to be at that special place on the Gila River Indian Reservation to hear from President Biden apologize to all of us that were there. And I would say there weren't that many of us there. I don't know what the exact number was, but from my count, there were only less than a handful of us from Southern California tribal communities. So it was really significant.
And for those who don't know the history, what did the boarding school era mean for Indigenous students, particularly in our region?
Well, I would say that the apology, first off, represents a significant but first step in acknowledging the federal government's role in the systemic destruction of California Indian families and Indigenous families and cultures. This apology has to be followed up with concrete actions and resources for healing, but it's a step in the right direction. And basically, the boarding school era lasted from the 1800s to the 1970s under the motto, "Kill the Indian, Save the Man." There were over 400 federal boarding schools across the United States where children were forcibly removed from their families as young as 4 years old. Children were forbidden to speak their native languages, to practice their culture, to wear traditional clothing. Instead, they were subjected to physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, and many children never made it home. Every single one of those boarding schools has a graveyard attached to it. Some of those graves are unmarked graves, and those graves continue to be discovered. And so we're not done locating our ancestors and finding how many thousands of children were lost during the boarding school era. And here in California, there were three boarding schools. St. Boniface was one, Sherman Indian School was another, Fort Bildwill was one, and I think there were four, actually. There were a Greenville Industrial School. St. Boniface was opened from the late 1800s and closed in 1974. And the only operating boarding school is Sherman Indian School, which originally opened in 1892. It was called the Paris Indian School and moved to Riverside in 1903 and renamed the Sherman Industrial School. But today it operates as a modern day, like, college preparatory school run by the Bureau of Indian Education with input from tribal communities.
So even for those who didn't attend those schools, intergenerational stress and trauma can be very real for younger generations. What does this apology mean for cultural identity for them?
Well, it's a path towards healing, right? The recognition that words alone can't undo these generational trauma impacts, but it's a step in the right direction. So some of the modern social issues that we see today are directly related and connected to the boarding school era and the trauma that that era brought to our families. It's the disruption of traditional parenting practices and family structures, the loss of language and culture, and knowledge transmission, higher rates of substance abuse, domestic violence, and mental health challenges, and educational disparities and distrust of institutional systems like education, economic disadvantages stemming from cultural and educational disruption. It also served to weaken our tribal government systems and our community bonds. So because of all of that, we see trauma passed down through generations, both behaviorally and through epigenetics. Parents who attended boarding school often struggle with emotional bonds, loss of traditional child-rearing practices, and cultural knowledge. Language is so important to sustaining culture. Our identity confusion, and cultural disconnection in younger generations, and the shame and stigma associated with Indigenous identity loss.
And you mentioned this apology being, you know, an opportunity to heal. Where does that community healing start?
Well, I do believe that President Biden meant his apology. I was there. I heard it. I saw it. I felt it. Sitting next to me was Juana Mahal Dixon, an elder from the Pama tribe, who was crying during that tearful time and apology. It meant a lot to the folks that were there that were of a particular age group that attended the boarding schools. I do think that apology is the first step to healing, but with that apology comes additional actions that have to happen. The government must atone by fully funding things like healthcare for tribal communities, education systems. They have to fund the protection of tribal lands. They need to protect tribal sovereignty and self-determination and honor those treaty obligations.
And what does tribal sovereignty and self-determination look like?
Tribal sovereignty and self-determination is fully supporting and funding tribal nations to take care of their lands, their people, their waters. That means upholding their self-determination to do that and not interfering with tribes' rights to do that. But they're going to need significant resources because through the history of colonization, especially here in California, many of our tribal communities were left disenfranchised. And so it's going to take a lot of investment to get us to where we need to be. Those generations of California Natives in particular who have faced trauma at the hands of both the state and federal government are going to need an investment of resources to make sure that tribal sovereignty and tribal cultures and tribal language and tribal peoples are protected, supported, and uplifted.
And earlier you mentioned, you know, one goal of these boarding schools was to erase native languages, but Indigenous leaders have been working hard to revitalize those languages. Can you talk more about how that process is going?
Yeah. So, you know, learning language is challenging when our children are going to 97% of American Indian children go to public schools. So it's only a small percentage that attend tribal schools or BIE schools. And so what we really need to do is invest in a language of the land initiative. That means every school is on native land, because this was, after all native land. So every school should offer the teaching and learning of the language of the land. So if your school is located in San Marcos, like my university is, they should be promoting, including the language of the land, which is the Pankawicham, the Luseno language. And so I would encourage each school to have to create language learning programs just like they do in Hawaii. And that would be one way of restoring the language. We could restore original place names to the landscapes. We can restore original place names around schools so that the language of the land becomes normalized and that people are learning the language and speaking the language, because the language is not just for tribal peoples to use and learn. We want to be able to have those people who are living amongst us and on our lands also use the language and the terms for the landscapes, the land, the waters, the resources around here. So that's going to take an investment. And I think the state of California could invest in schools so that they honor and uplift the language of the land. And of course, the federal government can do that as well.
Cultural revitalization also means celebrating art from film to fashion. Can you talk to me about why Indigenous representation is so important across various mediums?
Indigenous representation is critically important that Americans and people around the world see the excellence of Indigenous arts and cultures, language, from film to fashion to television to literature. We are everywhere. Indigenous fashion designers are reclaiming traditional aesthetics and are receiving critical acclaim. And we have Indigenous fashion shows like every week. We have our first ever member of the CFDA, Jamie Okuma, who is a local tribal member of the La Jolla Indian Reservation and tribal community. She's also Luceño Pancoichem, and her fashions are highly regarded. They sell out. And, you know, her art has really opened the door for many other young fashion designers to engage in celebrating their cultural traditions and dynamics through fashion. We have films and television shows that receive critical acclaim, like Reservation Dogs and the longstanding successful show Dark Winds, which is now going to be premiering its fourth season in early spring. I really like to encourage audiences during Native American Heritage Month to try and investigate by either picking up a book written by a Native author or seeing a film produced or directed by a Native author, tuning into a TV show that's been created by Native talent. But there's so much to choose for. And really, we've seen that happen in the last 5 years where there's been just a vibrant kind of plethora of artist contributions to pop culture from various tribes and various Indigenous nations and communities.
Finally, I want to end with this Native American History Month. I mean, what are you thinking about this year?
Well, for Native American History Month, I'm thinking about Indigenous knowledge as being the path forward for our survival, especially as we look to climate change and how modern day scientists are looking to Indigenous knowledge finally for things like environment and climate resilience, for protections of our land and waters, looking towards Indigenous knowledge around Indigenous foods for our health and wellness. So I'm excited now that scientists and others are finally elevating Indigenous knowledges to where they need to be. But I think doing that as a community, doing that as a planet, as a people that have a shared concern, and that is clean air, clean water. And I think we're going to have to do that collectively. So rather than trying to separate or silo out knowledges, looking to how we can work together to solve some of our critical problems.
That was a conversation with Midday Edition's Andrew Bracken and Jolie Proudfit. She is the Department Chair of American Indian Studies at Cal State San Marcos. That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
K KPBS On Demand is supported by Bilhau Plumbing, Heating and Air Restoration and Flood Services. Family-owned and operated over 4 decades, Bilhau has been serving the plumbing, heating and air, and water damage needs of the San Diego area since 1980. With their fleet of trained professionals, Bilhau has the ability to service all major and minor plumbing and HVAC emergency needs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Bilhau is committed to providing excellent service to their customers with transparent quotes and attention to detail on every job. Whether you're in need of an HVAC installation, plumbing, or water damage restoration in San Diego, they offer the convenience of scheduling an appointment over the phone, online, or through live chat on their website. Call 1-800-BILHOW or visit bilhau.com, because we know how.